Welcome to episode 29 of Pull Up with Miles and Owen. And today we are joined by Megan L. Hall. She is a staff writer at USA Today's For the Win. She covers the Atlanta Dream. She does incredible work. And, you know, we're having a very normal day here in the world of women's basketball. Nothing much exciting going on. No discourse to speak of. Megan, how's it going?
I'm living the dream, as the kids say. It has been a fantastic week, and I didn't even know what today was. That's how wild my week has been. So yeah, you could say I'm doing pretty swell.
I mean, we got to meet you on Monday, which was only a couple of days ago, which is wild to think about. How was was that your first WNBA draft experience?
Yeah, that was my first WNBA draft, like draft experience, period. Like that was it. And I gotta say, I did not realize how like fast it goes. Mm-hmm. Just from the time arriving for the media preview all the way to the night was ended, like that was like 9 hours of like chaos.
I think it's an underrated part of the draft experience as media is that you never feel in control of the night. Like it just gets away from you. I feel like as journalists, we try to enter events that we cover like with a grasp of, all right, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna plan it out, like all under control. You can't do that with the draft, and it's very disorienting.
There's a point where I was in the media room, and I think we had just finished with like Caitlin, and they were like, okay, Cameron's coming, and then it was like Camilla, and it just kept going, and I was like, wait a minute, I haven't even like gathered a thought yet. I'm like, what? It was just too much because I couldn't, like, I was trying to take notes about things I wanted to write about later. I'm sharing stuff with my team as well to post. Like, it was just too much happening at once. And I was like, this is not great for someone like me who has ADHD, where I'm like, wait, where do I pay attention to? Hold on. So yeah, it was great.
My first draft experience was, this is my third draft. So my first one a couple of years back, I remember that room didn't have a live TV feed in it. So no one there even knew who was getting selected. So it would be like, you would get someone up to the podium and then a reporter would be like, this person just went ninth, and everything was so delayed. So like you had just spoken to the number one pick and then the number seven pick was happening, and like just trying to calibrate all of that in real time, trying to, yeah, actually pay attention to what was happening for me, live tweeting stuff. And I was just like, this is, and at that point I gave up like halfway through. I spoke to like the first three or four players, then they went back on the floor. And at some point I was just like, I'm going to actually experience this and not just be kind of stuck in one place, because I think there's value to that too. Not just the networking, but to just actually being able to tell a full picture of your experience.
Yeah, I would agree, because that was one of the first things I said to my staff. And if you guys are listening or watching, like, I'm going to say it again, but I was like, hey, we probably need at least two people on site, one person who's going to sit in the media room, someone else who can be on the floor, because obviously social media is going to cover much on the floor, but there were some really cool things that were happening that weren't captured. Like there was a whole draft story about Kate Martin, how she knew, but didn't know that she was going to get drafted. Like that's something that I missed in the media room. So when I saw it afterwards, I'm like, wait, what? Like, this is actually really, really cool. And to hear people who were sitting in that section, you know, explain and how they knew, like, that's things that would be great if we had someone else who is, you know, who is sharing that room, and we can always communicate back and forth. But yeah, I mean, overall, like, lots to learn there, but for sure the speed was like, whoa, like, hold on, like, just a moment, please.
There's like a whole genre of journalist FOMO that you get covering an event where you feel so stressed because wherever you are, you're missing something else in another spot. And that's what I really can't get over about the draft, is nothing stresses me out. It gives me more anxiety as a writer covering an event than being in one place. And I'm supposed to be here, but I also should be there too. You just can't do it by yourself.
Oh man, I felt you nailed it. It is the fear of missing out. I just was like, okay, wait a minute. I am trying to do too many things at once. Things are happening. Like when we were on the orange carpet, those athletes were flying by. I'm trying to like tweet in real time and get updates. And I just realized, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to handle all this at once. So, but it was so cool though, because afterwards, like I was missing things, but I had several people tweet me and were like, no, we loved your coverage, it was great, we appreciate, you know, you giving us this inside look. And I'm like, really? Because I felt like I missed a ton.
I did the orange carpet last year, and something I was not prepared for was the fact that, like, I had never seen most of these players not wearing just a basketball uniform. So that is also, I'm like, wait, I know who you are. I need to like recalibrate my brain because I've never seen you after like 6 hours in a makeup chair as you're doing, as you're wearing your best, as you're, and I'm also not a fashion person at all. So like everyone to my right and left is like, oh, is that Prada? Is that Gucci? And I'm like, I couldn't tell you. Don't ask me. So that experience is also very different. But about the draft itself, 2.45 million viewers, which was about four times what the record had been previously, which was 20 years ago, which was DT's draft. So I think that that's a kind of cool symmetry because of how much there has been conversation about Caitlin Clark and Diana Taurasi and, you know, the old guard, new guard that we're kind of seeing come in. But just in terms of, I know that you haven't been in this W media space so long, but just in terms of even when you started in this space to now, how did you just experience, how do you experience these numbers just blowing up every time we see it? It's like new record, new record, new record.
I mean, I think it was, I will say quietly, but it's not so secret, right? Like it was happening last season. It was happening the season before. The WNBA has been growing. One of the things that I've been talking about is that we are experiencing in real time this collision course, right? You've got WNBA growth and women's college basketball growth happening at the same time. You're talking about exponential growth on both sides, and they are on a collision course. They have now arrived at the same place. And if you've been paying attention, like you absolutely knew this was coming, but I think it also blew the minds of anyone who's in the media space of like just how big this was going to get. But I will say this, as someone who is relatively new, I've arrived within the last year or so, like it's even blown my expectations. And I've said this before, I was so upset with myself for like probably a smooth 2 months that like I felt like I was late to the party, right? Like I have been missing out. Where have I been? Why did I not start covering this sooner? Like, these athletes are phenomenal. Their stories are fantastic. Like, where have you been? But then I realized like my timing was almost perfect because I got here in the middle of last season. And then when the season ended and I got to USA Today, they were like, hey, would you want to cover college basketball? Sure. So I'm covering it from start to finish. I've been able to see this beautiful blossom. And now all these players that I've been writing about, I've been podcasting about, doing videos on, are all standing in front of me. And it's kind of like in real time, you're like, oh, that's Caitlin Clark. Oh, that's Cameron Brink. Wow, she's really tall. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those like inner dialogues that you're like, they're real, but to see them in person, to see the person that the whole country is talking about, right? This individual, to see the whole 2024 class, or at least the upper echelon, I would say, of the 2024 class standing in front of you is almost, I don't, it's almost hard to comprehend. And to think that the entire country is, yeah, it's 2.4 million that were watching the draft, but everyone's in on women's sports right now. Everyone is talking about it, as we've been saying. There's all this chatter. It's really cool to see. And in my mind, I'm like, wow, I get to write about all of this. I get to analyze, I get to write stories, I get to think about it, and I'm loving it right now.
I love that so much. I want to get into a number of things, and we're gonna discuss the discourse that swept us all up this week in a little bit. But I think it's so important to hear that and to remind ourselves that we can use this fuel to cover the league even better and just put all of this energy that we're feeling that is so palpable into our writing, into our podcasting, into whatever forms of content we have. I wanted to isolate something. I thought you framed it perfectly talking about a collision course, because I think there's this perception that, like, the women's college basketball has these ludicrous viewership numbers and the Final Four goes crazy. And then everyone's like, oh, okay, but then no one's going to watch the WNBA, which is patently false, as we know. The numbers grow every single year in the WNBA, breaking records constantly, whether it's the All-Star game, the finals, the draft, the momentum has been here. But obviously not at the scale of 24 million people at its peak watching the championship game. What did you feel in person at BAM in this draft where fans were there on Monday night? that kind of speaks to the fact that no, this is here to stay, and the W is growing at just a rapid pace as the college game is.
Yeah, I'm almost getting chills talking about it, but there was a moment where we were in the media room, and I think that they were trying to get the sound together for the TVs that we were in there, but we could hear Kathy Engelbert out there talking, and I think she was introducing some of the folks in the audience, right? And there was a cheer for nearly every player that she said. We could hear that, you know, very, very loud, that sort of thing. But in my mind, to me, that says people know who these players are. They know that this sport, this moment has arrived, right? And I think in my mind, there was always an energy. There was a buzz in that building, from the fans to, oh my gosh, even just the other media members who were excited about, being able to cover and to ask questions and things like that. I think overall, I did get a sense of gratitude. That was the underlying that I felt that I came away with from not just like fans, but media members, but also players. I'll shout out Nika, because she came in her presser and media members are asking her questions, and she's telling every person that asked her a question, thank you so much for the question. I appreciate, like, you could just sense that she was just so grateful to be in that moment. And she even said something like, do you not realize how full circle this is? You know what I mean? Like, it's all those moments. And one of the things I thought about, and maybe no one else was thinking about this, but, and I'm probably going to date myself here, but the other day I was on the internet and I saw a birth date, and it says 2002. Angel Reese was born in 2002. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, if I really reached the point where, like, we're in the 2000s, like the 2000s babies. But my point saying that is that means that other girls, other athletes in this draft class were also born around that same time, the same year. And that means, like, how much do the stars have to align for all these generational type athletes to be in one class all at once? You know what I mean? Like, for this to be the most anticipated draft class in seemingly almost 20 years, like, that just doesn't happen. Like, so there are a lot of things that have to happen to get to that point. And that's just kind of the way my brain thinks when we, like, what all happened for us to get to this point at this moment with all of us in this room to celebrate these athletes?
So the way that, just off of that point, the way that my brain works is, when I first started covering the W, it was 2019. And around that time, the draft picks that were coming into the league were born around the same time as the league had started itself. So when you would talk to players and you would ask them who their favorite player was, you were going to get Kobe. You were going to get, LeBron. And now I'm trying to remember, I really want to credit the reporter who was doing this. It might've been Janae Sims was just asking to, like, pick, she was asking on the orange carpet, like, pick two players that you want to play 3-on-3 with. And I actually think Caitlin was the only one who used men. I think everybody else used women, and it was either their college teammates or it was players in the W. And I just love that shift. And I think Rekia might have taken Benaja and Ka, I think. And I was just like, this is incredible. And watching that shift, and it goes hand in hand with the fact that their entire lives, the WNBA has existed, and through varying degrees, it has been accessible. But I think throughout their entire college time, because they've all been in college now, we're seeing the back end of that, of the COVID year, right? Of the extra extension COVID year. So, like, in this iteration of the CBA, where, yes, there's a lot of discourse about salary right now, but that has been, doubled, tripled since what it was in 2020. So, like, they're seeing this as not just an opportunity to play with the best players in the world, but they're watching it actively grow as they build towards it and have had these role models. I mean, you talk about 2002, DT was drafted in 2004. Like, we've been doing this for a minute. So just kind of seeing all of that come together is just incredible. And I think it lends itself to the storytelling, right? Because all these players will have had posters on their wall of players that were in the W. And I think that that's just such a cool thing. And I don't know that it necessarily gets talked about enough. We try to do it on our show whenever we have a player on, when we talk about, like, your welcome to the W moment, or, like, who were your influences growing up. And it's a palpable shift that I feel like we've been seeing recently.
Yeah, what 100, I mean, 100% agree. Like it's almost mind blowing. Like, and I feel like, you know, I was telling my husband like the other day, I was like, I felt a shift in myself as well this season where I just felt like I couldn't get enough of what was happening. And I've used this example before with people and telling them like how much my basketball knowledge has grown in the last like, I don't know, 6 months or so. But there was a point where it's like 11:30 at night and I'm watching women's basketball. I can't even tell you what game it was at the time because it's long season, but my husband comes down and he's like, you are in the trenches. Like he's like, are you? He's like, you need to go to bed. And I'm like, I can't, this game is way too good. Like I'm just, you know, I'm going off about it. But then I realized like I didn't want to miss anything. I wanted to make sure I had the full context so that I could give people their flowers. I could give them their, you know, their just due, and we could talk about it and have that sort of ongoing conversation.
Well, this is a perfect transition in giving people their flowers because I think that one of the main frustrations for those of us who watch, who actually watch, who actually engage, is that we are having the negative byproduct of this massive growth is that there is also a massive influx that is happening right now of people who are not entering this space with good intentions and are indicative of the bad sides of sports fandom. And so as I wear my tea with A and Fee hoodie, shout, you know I'm gonna rep Asia Wilson on every episode of this show. And we were met with the news, I believe yesterday, although time, I don't even know what time is anymore after the past 48 hours, that Caitlin Clark has received an eight-figure shoe deal with Nike. Meanwhile, Asia Wilson, the face of the WNBA, and you know, we could list her accolades forever. Not to mention one of Time's most influential people, 100 most influential people. That was announced this week. New York Times best-selling author. I don't need to go off. I do this all the time. Miles hears it constantly every single day. Here I am getting fired up. The point is this: Asia Wilson does not have her own shoe. It's ludicrous, the disrespect. And I think the reason that we are in this space is to spread stories of the people who deserve to have this support behind them and are being bypassed by the hottest thing in the sport. And so that can be very frustrating for us who do this earnestly. How have you felt being one of those people that, like you said, is up at 11:30 watching games and doing amazing work in this space just to get met with trolls?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I tweeted earlier, but I said everyone's a marketability expert this morning suddenly. But you know what's really interesting is not a lot of people knows I have a background in marketing. I worked in marketing for 12 years before I got into sports. I have 2 degrees, a master's and a bachelor's. I also have a certificate. So, when we want to talk about marketability, like yes, let's start there. Like, let's start with the why, which you might have seen me like, you know, I won't say arguing, but like trying not to argue in my mentions with people who are just, you know, yelling into the abyss, essentially. I think the bigger issue here is that this isn't the first time that Nike has mishandled an athlete of generational talent. I think about the Allyson Felix story a lot, and that is really what the vibes that I get right now. Maybe I'm incorrect, and perhaps I don't know what is to come for Asia, right? But I feel like at this juncture right now, the fact that she, we haven't seen anything from any sort of concept other than the one that we saw, you know, just days ago. That was, you know, essentially just a kind of a, oh, this is nice. But my point being is that when you have a generational athlete with marketability, right? Multiple endorsements, New York Times bestselling author, she went on a book tour, like the personality to match, like, I don't understand not throwing the dollars behind there because the thing is, it's not saying that Caitlin doesn't deserve the just due that she's getting, right? She absolutely does. We weren't even having this conversation if Caitlin isn't doing what she's doing, right? But it's also saying that where along the line did we decide that Asia Wilson wasn't worth it? And where along the line did we decide, like, hey, we're not going to throw our dollars behind her. We'll try her out at our Nike Paris fashion show. But we haven't had the tangible discussions about and put it into action about her shoe. And I think to me, when you have the face, you know, face of the WNBA, That's a shame because Stewie's got a signature shoe. Sabrina's got one. Candace Parker has one. We've had multiple, what, 12, 11, 12 other players who've had one, previously, when they were active players. Like, it just blows my mind that this is not even a thing. And, I said it yesterday, but I'm like, I need someone to tell me, like, I'm five, why this hasn't happened yet. Like, break it down to me for the raw level, because I don't understand for the life of me.
Something that I saw, and I've seen so much great online, and I just pulled it up now, was there was a thread from Clinton Yates yesterday just talking about the WNBA changing. And I just want to read, I mean, it was an entire great thread about just how we cover these athletes. And I just want to read a couple because the entire thing was great. But he said, none of us have ever really lived in a space where for the WNBA, which is necessarily the specific point here. It has the undeniable space in just regular everyday life that changes the priority of the male gaze entirely. There are many men who are simply not ready for that. And don't get me wrong, the growth is awesome, but I can tell you from life experience, never mind as a sports journalist, that there's still a very nice, that's nice for the ladies kind of idea to all of it. And we're far closer to these women control the zeitgeist period than we know. And I know that I'm conflating a couple of things that have been going on in this space, but I think it also does relate back to just how we view Asia Wilson, how we view Caitlin Clark, how we view Sabrina Ionescu, and how when we talk, it's impossible. And I think the conversation could be that sports are inherently political, and it can also be the racial relations that are there in sports. So when you're talking about marketing and you're looking at what the players look like that are granted these opportunities, we have to look at what those marketing metrics are that say Asia Wilson, because just Meg, you were just saying over and over, like she checks every box. It's on the court, it's off the court, it's the personality, it's the charisma, it's the fact that she's a multi-time MVP and sitting on a finals MVP right now. She's an Olympian. What else can she do? And if your numbers are not getting you to the point where you're like, okay, she should be the cover of everything, then I think that we really need to take a step back and say, what are the metrics that are being used that are getting to this wrong conclusion? Because that's what it really is. And so often we're looking at sports through the prism of men's sports and those ideas of success. But oftentimes, I think it's also when they're trying to figure out what the fans or what the consumers are looking for. And we keep on coming back to the fact that it is white women again and again. And that's not to say that Stewie should not have a signature shoe. I also say Sabrina should have a signature shoe. Caitlin, those numbers, like we've been saying over and over, are just, she is a comet that has flown through the sky and just really like upped everything, and everything should grow. But it's, I think, unfair and it's deliberately ignorant to ignore who's getting passed over when you also talk about Skylar and the opportunities that she hasn't had that she should probably have for just for what's kind of in this space. I know that I just threw a whole bunch at you, but yeah, that all of that.
No, I think you bring up good points. And I think what comes to my mind is inclusive storytelling. That is where my brain goes, is when we talk about, well, why isn't this athlete marketable? And she's not marketable because of this, or this athlete is marketable because of that. It all, to me, what that says is that we've not been telling the stories enough. I say it all the time, that when you find something great, you want to tell everybody, right? If you went to the store and you tried a fantastic, I don't know, dressing for your salad, right? If it blew your mind, you're going to tell your friend. You're going to text your friend and be like, listen, I don't know if you eat salads or not, but this dressing is fantastic. Like, add it to everything, right? That's how it works. But what you're doing in that moment is you're telling a story. You're putting your friend in that moment with you and saying, listen, I went to the store, I tried it, I ate it on my salad. Oh my gosh, it lit my soul on fire. That's what we have to do with the storytelling, right? And that's where I think we're falling short here. And I've said it multiple times, is that, like, the WNBA doesn't necessarily have an athlete problem. They don't even have a revenue problem, contrary to what people think. it's a storytelling issue. And the league has acknowledged that as well. You have to do more about telling more inclusive stories. That is saying, you know, that this athlete who you may identify with has a story. This athlete has a story. That athlete has a story. But I think what instead we've done is we've latched on to the flashy things. Oh my gosh, logo threes. And holy cow, those are super impressive. I'm not negating any of that. But what I want to know, to be honest with you, I didn't want to know about Caitlin's logo threes. I know she can shoot those. I want to know about what Caitlin does on a Sunday morning. I want to know about like what sets her soul on fire. What show does she watch when she needs a good cry? Like, those are the things that I want to know, the inner workings of a player, so that when we tell these stories, we can essentially put people into almost into the mindset of that player and what it's like to be around them all the time. And I think that's the issue with the Asia versus Caitlin debate is like, have we bothered to tell Asia Wilson's story enough, right? Have you shouted it enough? Because Caitlin's story is getting told everywhere, which tells me like, yeah, people always had the ability to tell these stories, right? They've picked and they've chosen where they wanted to put their efforts. And that to me is a problem. There's this unbalanced attack for telling stories in the WNBA that we claim we don't have the ability to do, but whoop, all of a sudden someone comes by that gets our attention and we can write like lightning and churn out stories all, you know, at the drop of a hat. And I think that is where I get upset with people, because I'm like, this is all, you've always had the ability to do that. So I've tried to do my best since I got to USA Today to churn out the stories, not just for Caitlin, but for anyone. And you might have seen some of my things. I'm like, hey, if you like Caitlin, come look at these other players. If you like this team, please look at these other players. Because I want people to have a more nuanced conversation and have more in-depth conversation so they can be knowledgeable. Like, nothing sets my soul on fire more than when I talk with someone and they were like, hey, I read your piece. I had no clue this was even true. Or like, I didn't even know about this topic, but now I feel educated because you wrote about it and you wrote it in a way that like makes sense and I can understand it. That's what we should all be aiming for when we tell these athlete stories, like writing it in a way that humanizes them and makes them relatable.
It's so true. I always say like my favorite compliment to receive as a writer is from someone who tells me, I don't care at all about basketball. I didn't even know what you were talking about when you were talking about the basketball, but I loved your story because I learned something about this person. And this is why we wanted to have you on today in this momentous moment in the growth of women's basketball, is to talk to another storyteller, someone who does this so well. And a player that comes to mind off of everything you were just saying is Jewel Lloyd, who is another person that checks every box. This new commercial she's in, like, she has acting talent for real. Like, that is real acting talent. And I'm not just saying that. Like, I really mean that. People don't know Jewel Lloyd, professional pickleball player, casually. Like, what? Come on. Two championships. I could go on and on. And it's just so, it's depressing, frankly, that people don't know her story, and it's indicative of systemic failure from a number of different arenas, and especially a storytelling media perspective, and frankly, one that is only going to become more important and get more difficult with this influx of casuals applying for credentials. And I'm not sure we're prepared, but it feels good to talk about it.
You know, I'll add this quickly, is that I had the pleasure of talking to Jewel within the last several months. And one of the things she said to me was that she was trying to get more comfortable with media and sharing more of her story with media. And to me, that said that she didn't feel comfortable in the space. And that says a lot to me. So are we creating the spaces for, you know, us to hold space for these stories? So the fact that, you know, like, you know, that Jewel's story is slowly blossoming now, it's like, okay, she's becoming more and more comfortable in that space. But it just, yeah, that just screamed to me, oh my gosh, like, who has not provided you this space where you don't feel comfortable sharing parts of yourself and you get what we call athlete speak when you're speaking to media? And that, I think, is part of the much larger conversation that we should be having when we're telling stories.
I will say for myself, because I might be the only one here that has a background in creative writing, not in journalism. I kind of came to this backwards. So storytelling was always, even if it's telling the story of a game and then extrapolating out from that, the rest of it was always where my interest was. And it was for exactly what you're both saying, that that's a way to tell the narratives. And I think that that's part of why at the top of this conversation, when you talk about the growth that was in college that seemed to be happening independently from the growth that's happening in the WNBA, that now there's a sort of synergy there. I feel like this is the first year we really saw that lead in, but this is not the first time that a player has gone pro and brought a big college following with them. And it hasn't even been that long. Aaliyah did this last year, but at least locally, we saw that with Sabrina back in 2020. And I know that Caitlin almost feels like I said, like a metastasized version of what we saw with Sab, but we had seen, because before that there had been three or four, I was one of three or four beat writers on all of these Zoom pressers. And then I saw 30 people in the Zoom, and then Sab leaves and 2/3 of the people dip out. So like this has happened before. And I think that's worth noting, but also what we've seen is the growth in the storytelling, where we have been clamoring for pre and post games and just coverage outside of the, I'm tired of going from the final tip in a 1-point game to, I don't know, a bowling rerun. And we saw in this tournament run, what ESPN was doing by creating that bookended coverage with Elle and with Andrea and with Chinee, and how much that helped tell the stories. Because yes, what Caitlin is doing right now, and I don't want to minimize it because it is outstanding. She is in terms of like on court, and in terms of just the conversation she's generating off of it, just a star already. And the W is, and these companies are doing everything they could to kind of like capitalize on that, which is what they should be doing. But the Chicago Sky gaining 100,000 followers on social media since Monday's draft, because they bring in Camila Cardoso and they bring in Angel Reese. And those are two stories that we've heard a lot about these last couple of years. And so I feel like it does a disservice to just that synergy that we're seeing grow to the pro level by not also acknowledging that this is not this singular comet, like I said, like streaking across the sky, that it's this whole conversation. The entire thing is growing. And now how can we capitalize on that outside of, you know, Nike giving us jerseys when people order them?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I thought a lot about this as in real time while the draft was happening, and I wanted to make sure that I asked questions that were fun or things like that, because you guys know my work for The Win is we do the fun angles. But I also asked, you know, more humanizing questions because I felt like there were some athletes who weren't getting their just due. De'Asia Fair was one who I asked her, you know, what do you want to say to people now that you've made it to the WNBA? And it was just a very simple question because I knew exactly what I was doing when I asked that question. I wanted to give her the floor, the space to tell her story that frankly, not enough people were telling. And that includes myself, you know, that we should have been leaning into more, but third all time in scoring for women's college basketball and 5'5", which means a hooper to be able to do that. Like, you know, shout out to the small athletes, you know, unite. But in my mind, you know, De'Asia Fair, Alyssa Peely, like those are names that need to be held up, right? Like they are part of this ginormous class that is bringing so many eyes to the game. And I beg of my fellow media members to please lean into their stories. They deserve to have their stories told. We cannot like just look at the brighter comments. There, you know, there's other elements here as well. So I think that if we're able to do that, I'm so excited for what's to come this season. I cannot wait for W season. I live and thrive in the pregame and postgame pressers anyways. Those are my favorite times, especially the pre, because you get to have all the fun and ask all the questions. Like, what kind of socks are you wearing today, coach? Like, those are the things that I like, because again, it's that human side of it. And that's what I try to bring to like my coverage. So if you guys have probably seen me tweeting about my, you know, pregame pressers or whatever. Yeah. It's all the fun stuff. Like, what are you listening to right now? What are you dancing to on the court? Like those things that they're just fun. And you're right. There's like two or three media members in there, but you know who is in there? Me. And they know when I'm not there. Because I made the effort to show up. So I just think that we've got to do better with that.
I couldn't agree more. I'm so happy the conversation moved in this direction because it's something I think about constantly as a writer and I'm so passionate about, is approaching the job with a sense of responsibility and humility. Like nothing annoys me more than journalists that are so self-important and just want to insert themselves into every question that is asked. Can we just get a clear, concise question, like you said, that offers an athlete a platform to introduce themselves to the world and just be themselves? And we don't get a lot of that. And consistency is key in that, and building that trust and just being normal, building relationships. It's depressing the level to which you see athletes forced to shut themselves off to the media because they don't feel comfortable in the space. And we need to talk about that more because you're never going to have good coverage of that without that.
And we need to talk about it right now too, because it's about to get wild. It's about to change. Even what has existed is about to get wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're both right. I think something I saw also that irritates me is, and this is not necessarily directed at anyone, but I've seen media members come in, ask one question, dip out.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Like they've come for one thing and one thing, whatever that one thing is, but they've come for one thing, ask their question, and they're out.
Yep.
And it's like, how do you do that with a conscience? Like, I mean that genuinely, like, how do you say, all right, I'm going to ask for credentials for my one question and then get out. And that's it, without right. getting a full proper story, without listening to what your colleagues are asking, building your story with the help of their questions, like getting the full experience there to provide that additional context to your viewers and your readers. That part blows my mind.
And I'll say to that end that, like, I do understand that what a journalist is, what a media member, what a content creator looks like in 2024 can mean a whole bunch of stuff. So I'll say it's a privilege of mine that I don't ever have to write on deadline. Like, I know there are some people that have to get in there, get their quote, pop over to someone else, and they need like the top two and get out. And that's not my experience. But yeah, there are some people that are just bad faith. Oftentimes, I'd say 8 times out of 10, it's a question that's also already been asked that they just want to hear themselves speak, and they're not actually engaged in anything. But yeah, there's so much. But I know we've got to get you out of here, but I have a question. Sorry, Owen.
I just got to shout out our friend. I know we've reached the end here, but I've got in that. I just want to say message to all the media here. Kareem Copeland is one of the best in the business. He writes for the Washington Post, friend of the pod. If I watch him in a press conference on a Washington Post deadline, still there for the entire press conference, and yeah, maybe he has to pop his headphones on to start transcribing, but even still, he is present and wanting to ask every member of the Mystics a question and cover the game to its fullest. If he can do it like that, then I promise you can do it. So I just wanted to get that out there.
No, that was important. I mean, it wasn't as important as my final question, because we have not spoken to you at all about the Atlanta Dream. And one of our favorite players in the league is Cheyenne Parker. And we would be remiss if we did not ask you for your favorite Cheyenne Parker story on the way out.
That's a good one. It's actually probably two. So it was her birthday, and I just passed by her, and I'm like, happy birthday, CP. And she just lit up. Like, I mean, you could just tell it just made her day. And she's like, thank you. And she just got this big smile. And it was such a small moment in that time frame, but it was one of my favorite memories of her, because it's just so rare. I don't think she was expecting it at all. And she just lit up, and it just made my whole day. The other story is just, it's season long. Cheyenne dances before every game. You catch them out, they're warming up. Cheyenne is always boogieing. And so I asked her who was a better dancer, her or Nas, because they both are really good dancers. And she said, well, Nas learned from me. So there you go. But that is just those little small little moments like that is what makes, you know, covering the Dream so special. Cannot wait to just get in front of them and see how their off season went. They're a phenomenal group. So if you get the chance to go see a Dream game, fans, please do. The games in Atlanta are always lit. They feel like they're always sold out. and always packed because everyone wants to come see the show.
The vibes might be too good on the Atlanta Dream. That's my only concern. It's a problem. And shout out to the social team too. We got to give props now since it's been a lot of, you know, hefty discussions. Like Atlanta does such a good job of highlighting these players and, you know, their tunnel fits coming in and the music they listen to, all the fun, you know, stuff off the court. So shout out to them. What a fun team.
Yeah, they did a Made for the A series last year, which was great. It was phenomenal. Very, very great inside look at the inner workings of the team and the players. And I just absolutely love that team. So shout out to them too.
Love it. Love it. Meg, thank you so much for taking the time. I don't know if you even know what day it is, but so to take the time and to show up at a Zoom meeting, that's pretty awesome. Meg, where can everyone find you? Where can they find your work?
Yeah, for sure. So it's ftw.usatoday.com. That is USA Today's For the Win. If you check our WNBA, college basketball, pop culture, you're going to see me all over the site, but those are my wheelhouses for sure in women's sports. If you're on Twitter, if you're on Instagram, it's ITS Megan L. Hall. That's Megan with an H because I like to be a little fancy. But feel free to give me a follow there and see what I'm doing.
Thank you so much. And we're going to either have to make a trip down to Atlanta or you're going to have to come back up to New York and we're going to chill this season at some point.
I'm here for it. Let's do it.
Let's go. Thank you so much.